Hi, everybody, and welcome to All Things Aviation and Aerospace. My name is Vince Mickens, and I'm with the Private Air Media Group. It's great to have everybody today. And this is, the last couple of shows were more aerospace specific, dealing with space exploration and the unmanned mission to Mars. This one brings us back home to the root of aviation and one of the areas that is, I think, often overlooked, and that is flying air cargo. So hopefully today we'll be able to give you as viewers insight on this opportunity. For those of you, I was just talking about the fact that there are a lot who have kind of hit the brick wall last year because of COVID and trying to figure out the next steps and that type of thing. And air cargo flying is definitely something that is a great career, has a great path towards a great career. And there's a lot of opportunity with it at many different levels. So hopefully with the guests that we have today, we'll kind of cover all of that and answer some questions and give you some insight that would be helpful and productive for your career goals. Without further ado, I will start and introduce our guests. First, we have Stanley Bernstein. Stanley is the founder and president of the Regional Air Cargo Carriers Association. He is a former airline pilot for Air New England and Piedmont Airlines and has quite a history in the air cargo industry. Stanley, welcome to the program.
Thanks. It's nice to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, it's great to have you. And we have Captain Handel Wellington, who is a Boeing 747 flight training supervisor at the ANC flight training facility for UPS Airlines. Yes, you heard me correctly, UPS Airlines. A lot of times we don't think of the cargo carriers as an airline, but in fact they are. We'll talk a little bit more about that. Interesting side note almost, not really a side note, but another interesting aspect of Captain Wellington's career. He is also a Juris Doctorate law. He has a Juris Doctorate law degree, is an arbitrator and civil and domestic relations mediator, and is registered with the Georgia Supreme Court's Commission of Dispute Resolution. So outside of the whole flying thing, I think he might be able to share a little bit of legal insight for us as well. And then we have Jody Pryor. Jody flies the ATR 42 and 72 for Empire Airlines. There's another one that you may not be familiar with, Empire Airlines, that does a lot of different things, including, of course, cargo. And she also teaches Part 121 Ground School. Jody, welcome to the show. Glad to have you here. Look forward to hearing more about your background.
Thank you.
We're glad to have today with us Josh Hernandez. Josh, I first met at NBAA, the National Business Aviation Association. So I've watched him grow from that internship at NBAA to what he's doing currently. And he's still just getting started in his career. Josh flies a 135 cargo for AirNet 2 in a Lear 35 and a Beechcraft Baron. And we were talking a little earlier, and he's also got some time in a King Air. And I think he said a Pilatus. And so it'll be fun to hear the early stages of his career and what he's doing. Josh, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Vince.
It's great to have all of you guys on board with us today. And gosh, what a variety of backgrounds. But what I'd like to do to start with is I'm going to go to you, Stan, and ask you to tell us a little bit about how you got started into flying and how that led to getting into cargo, air cargo business, and also you actually being a founder of the Regional Air Cargo Carriers Association. Mouthful.
Well, thank you for again inviting me, and I'd be happy to outline that for you. As a very young age, the aviation bug had bitten me when I was 14 and 15 year old. I used to hang out at the fence at old Idlewild Airport in Kennedy, is of course now the new name, but to sit there and watch all the airplanes. And I always remember a very fond moment. I was at the fence and there was an Eastern Airlines DC-7 way back then parked there. And the crew was just coming out of the aircraft, and the captain noticed that I was looking at the airplane from the fence. And with a little wave of his finger, he said, hop the fence and come over here. And with that, I hopped the fence and he obviously took me on a beautiful tour of the airplane and most importantly, the cockpit. And from that day on, it was a sealed fate as to what my future might be. Of course, we can't do those things today. And young people that have education sort of get stuck on the remote ports of airports and have to imagine what it might be like. But I was fortunate to have the ability to start flight training when I was 16 years old. As each birthday came along, I was able to get a license that was appropriate for the age. I started my career very early on flying charters out of the New York area, was able to get some flight time doing that. Then went to work for Air New England, spent 10 years there flying all of the commuter sized airplanes right up through the Fairchild 227. And then moved on to Piedmont Airlines, which I flew for a number of years. And that's where I flew the Boeing 737. I resigned from that company in the late 80s to start my own aviation company because I began to recognize that freight was a thing of the future. Smaller airplanes were just beginning to be used to serve the regional markets that the large freight integrators such as FedEx, UPS, DHL had. But as we all know, their large equipment does not fly into the small country locations and out of the way areas. So inevitably, there was a great deal of room for growth in the regional cargo areas to fill that void. As years progressed, I purchased a number of aircraft for my leasing company, leased them to small freight carriers who worked under contract to the big three integrators. And really the rest is history. Today, UPS utilizes about 400 regional cargo aircraft that are all members of RACA, and about the same for FedEx, utilizes about 400. We have 50 air carriers. The vast majority are Part 135 operators, although there are some 121 operators. And they supply the regional role to the major freight and integrators. And as we all know, we've learned to shop very well on the internet. We've all become very accustomed to pushing that send button. And lo and behold, there's our little package at our doorstep in a day or two or three.
And you guys play a big role with that.
And we play a big role.
Yeah.
It's pretty quiet. Most people are unaware of what we do. But the fact is we get the job done along with our integrator partners. We do a remarkable job. And also, I might add, it's a very stable industry. COVID has had, as we all are aware, a very negative effect on the passenger airlines, but the cargo business continues to boom, courtesy of the internet and all of the buying that goes on the internet.
So let's talk about the career, because it's something, as we mentioned earlier, when these kids are in school, of studying aviation, doing flight training, et cetera, their track is usually most definitely the airlines, secondarily corporate, corporate and charter, et cetera, and that type of thing. And so, you know, we don't hear a lot of conversation. I'm just being candid about it. Excuse me. We don't hear a lot of conversation about cargo flying, but it is a huge industry. As you mentioned, it's really growing. And there's a lot of aspects. What's your perspective on that in terms of opportunities for the upcoming generation of pilots getting into the cargo industry?
Well, the opportunities are great. As I mentioned just briefly a minute or two ago, the cargo industry has been a remarkably stable industry. As we look back on the passenger airlines in their most recent 20 years of history, there have been bankruptcies after bankruptcies. You don't find that with the big freight integrators. They're stable companies. They have excellent pay grades. They're a pleasure to work with. They're very professional. They're safety oriented. And their philosophy of doing business is one that cannot be questioned under any circumstances. They do a great job. And we, as the regional side of that, are obviously the entry level point. When a young person obtains their commercial instrument multi-engine, of course, they're all looking for a job after they get a couple of hundred hours flight instructing. And usually one of the entry-level jobs is flying in the freight area. We're one of the few businesses that actually could hire relatively low-time pilots because so many of our members are utilizing the single engine Cessna Caravan turboprop, a relatively easy airplane to fly. Once trained and go through a check ride, it's a pretty easy aircraft to master. And that's often the beginning or first step in a regional cargo airline career. Once you get comfortable in that aircraft, many of our members are operating aircraft that are above that level. You could get into a multi-engine airplane, a Beech 1900, an ATR, a Saab. There are many of those in our organization, represented by our organization. And so there's plenty of opportunity there. And then, of course, we all know that the outlook for major airline pilots is very bright, whether it be UPS or FedEx. There's excellent pay opportunities, and I emphasize that, compared to many of the other carriers. And I also emphasize that there's a great deal of stability in this business. And glitzy glamour on the passenger side is not always the best solution for a career-oriented individual.
Spoken like a true cargo pilot. No, I'm just kidding. but you know, you mentioned three aircraft, and I just want everybody to know you're talking about twin turboprops, the 1900, the ATR, and the Saab. Those are all twin turboprops that are commonly used for these regional flights. Let me move over to Captain Wellington with UPS. And Captain, how about telling us a little bit about your perspective on what Stan just shared with us, and then a little bit about your background.
Yes, I couldn't agree with Stan anymore. You hit the nail right on the head. It's a very stable industry, especially the evidence is now there now that we're going through this COVID period where the future is so uncertain. You can see where the stability remains in the cargo industry. And while the passenger airlines is going through a little bit of a turbulence, the cargo industries are sustaining and doing real well. Regarding my background, I started off my career in Walla Walla, Washington. I was a civil engineer student in Walla Walla College, and then I had a friend that took me on a flight to Boeing Field. We were only kids, about 18 years of age, and I was amazed at that we were able to. I was able to fly with kids around my age, and we were able to take an airplane.
That's quite a wake-up call, isn't it?
It was quite the wake-up call to be able to do it. I barely had a driver's license at the time. And then what was fascinating is I was sitting in the back seat of the airplane. My friend said, hey, you know, he was a pilot, and I was blown away. I was like, wow, you're 19 and you're a pilot and an instructor, you know, I wonder if I could do something like that. So I went with him to Boeing Field, and I was in the back seat, and I was just amazed when they came out of the clouds and the runway was there. And I was like, wow, I've always wanted to be a pilot, but it was just amazing seeing it come to life, you know? And so after that, I went back to my student advisor and said, I wanted to switch my career path from civil engineering to aviation. So I got into aviation and completed my bachelor's degree in aviation technology from Walla Walla University, where I also received all my ratings as well. So once I was done, it was 2001, which was right around September 11th. That happened when I was just coming out of college, and I was like, wow, what am I going to do at this point? This is going to be a tough path moving forward. But, you know, I was never one to give up. And, you know, I always find a way to make things possible. So
would you say that was had some similarities to what young people are going through, went through in 2020 with COVID-19?
Absolutely.
Kind of, it's almost, I mean, it's another tragic situation, but at the same time, it also shut down a lot of careers.
It certainly has. And if you look at history, we usually go through a recession every 10 years. This was just one that was unplanned that affected the industry in a similar manner, especially the way I experienced it in 2001 and roughly every 10 years afterwards. So I started my career I looked around, couldn't find a flying job, and I got my first job as a loadmaster. Started in the cargo industry, believe it or not, as a loadmaster on the L-1011 and the DC-8 wow. for flying for Arrow Air, the Miami International. So as a loadmaster on the L-1011 and the DC-8, I was responsible for all the, you know, load supervising the loading, weight and balance, et cetera.
And absolutely. And
Central and South America.
No, I was just going to say, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I did mean to interrupt you because I'm impressed with that. Because one of the things that we try to tell people coming into the industry is sometimes you may have to take a position that's not exactly tied in with what you want to do. But it will keep you in the industry and help you move forward. So the fact that you took a job as a loadmaster, which, you know, has a lot to do with flying and nothing to do with flying, if you know what I mean. You're not in the cockpit.
I was a fourth crew member. It was a flying loadmaster
position. Oh, you were a flying loadmaster. Okay. Yeah. Thank you for correcting me. but my point is, I guess it's still wasn't actually being a pilot or in terms of flying the aircraft. But it being a crew member and being the fourth crew member, being in the cockpit and being responsible for weight and balance, which we all know can be very critical in any aircraft, but particularly cargo. That's just an admirable quality. And I had to just make that point. Go ahead and continue.
Yeah, thank you. And that was a very good point you point out, which I'd like to emphasize. You know, along our career path as pilots, you know, we have to be willing to accept the detours. Life is not guaranteed to be a smooth path. And I certainly know that for a fact because I have a story to tell. And it was an enjoyable experience. And I'm happy that I went through everything because now I can share it with aspiring and up and coming aviators that I've seen both sides, the good sides and the bad sides. And I can tell you that there's light at the end of the tunnel. You just got to keep on and always put God first, because there are times where you are down in the ditches and saying, wow, I wonder if I'll ever make it in this profession. You know, I've seen everybody else making it, but I'm here struggling and, you know, just keep praying and keep persevering and everything's going to work out, you know?
Sure.
And I just never gave up.
Yeah. Speaking of starting things and getting things going, I'm going to go to Josh. You know, Josh, as I mentioned earlier, you started out with your internship. Well, let me let you tell the story. Tell us a little bit about how you got going with aviation, because it's a great story and you're still building the story. So it's you're just getting started with your career.
I think Captain Wellington hit the nail on the head with the perseverance. You know, aviation's expensive. Starting off in aviation, it is one of the most, it takes a lot of capital to get going into, and that it's not always easy. You know, I grew up in Chicago, you know, as single parent home, and it, you know, it wasn't easy. You know, there was a point in time where during college where my mom, you know, she said, hey, I'm eating sandwiches and ramen noodles to make sure that you have, you know, your tuition is being paid for flight training. So I, you know, at that point I had to take a break and I stepped away from flight training for a while. But eventually came back to it. And ended up, man, I was working at Walgreens and at the FBO, you know, I was working two jobs at a time and then utilizing the FBO's employee discount to, you know, do my flight training, and all my buddies were instructors. So that helped a lot, but that's kind of a sidetrack.
You did what you had to do.
I did what I had to do. I made the sacrifices necessary and I stayed very diligent, stayed hopeful, stayed, you know, and continued to pursue my dream relentlessly. So I just wanted to touch on that, but yeah, my background, I grew up in Chicago. I was the only kid that seemed to be the only kid that was ever interested in flying airplanes that I knew.
Why were you interested? What sparked it?
So every year in Chicago, there's called the annual Air and Water Show. And it's like a lakefront show. They'd have the military come out, Blue Angels, Thunderbirds, aerobatic teams come out. They would, you know, just fly along the lakefront. And my mom would take me there since I can remember. And that's kind of where it started. I originally wanted to be a Blue Angel. So that's where, so I had these, I even had a little onesie as a kid that I drew like Blue Angel stuff on, and I always wore it. So, as a flight suit. So that's where it started. And then I stuck with it. It was something that it didn't go away. Like, it was always something that I always wanted to do. And we went every year, of course. So that definitely helped. And my mom, being as supportive as she was, she found out about EAA Young Eagles.
Yes.
People, you know, they take their airplanes and they give back to the community, and they give kids they just give kids the experience of flight. And that's where I had my first flight. It was actually out of Chicago's Lakefront Airport, Meigs Field, when it was still an airport, not a park.
Oh, wow. You just brought back a memory, Meigs Field.
Yeah, that was a tragic, super tragic event.
It was a perfect strip. You know why they did that? Well, anyhow, go ahead.
So that's where it started. And I met my mentor, who is my pilot, Steve Whitney. And he offered to, after the flight, he saw I was just so pumped about it. And you know, once he gave me the controls, it was in a Mooney M20. It was red. It was red and blue.
A hot rod.
Red and blue stripes. Yeah. I remember it I remember the smell. I remember getting in it. I remember it being, it was super cold, of course, in Chicago's lakefront in the middle of winter. But it was the most amazing experience ever. And that's really what drove it home. That's what made it stick. And he offered to mentor me. And from there, he had been exposing me to aviation throughout the years. And eventually he sent me an internship that MBAA had opening in the operations division. And I looked at the job description. I was like, they're not going to hire me.
Even know what MBAA was?
I had no idea. It's like the National Business Aviation Association. I did some research, and I was like, oh, okay, this is cool. Like, you know, I realized that they advocated and created a lot of, it sounded like such a large organization. I'm like, oh my God, the job description sounds crazy. They're not going to hire me. I don't meet these qualifications. And he was like, just send in an application, send in your resume, apply, and we'll go from there. And I interviewed, got the job, and hands down, the most amazing experience I've had. I was able to meet so many people and get exposed to so much.
And you learned about another aspect of the industry. You learned about business flying.
I did. I didn't know that MBAA, it seems like a big organization, but it's a very small organization, but yet they do so much for the industry as a whole. And that's what kind of got me really going in business aviation. And there I started to learn the language of business aviation and aviation in general. By that time, I'd only had my private pilot's license. And once I left there, I was able to win two scholarships, go to conferences, network with a ton of people. And again, I was a sponge. I made it my job to learn everything I could, and took that, went back to flight training, worked at the FBO, built my time there, and networked again. And from there, I was ended up in the right seat of a King Air 90, a PC-12. Eventually, I flew skydivers in a 182, aerial survey in a 206, and then got hired at a charter company flying a Citation XLS. And now I'm at a cargo operator flying Radio Pharmaceuticals and a Lear 35 and Beach Baron.
So your determination is really to be admired, because you're talking about going through several iterations of flying to get to which we'll talk about in a second, to cargo. But you just said you flew a King Air C-90, I think it was.
Yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. C-90 and the Pilatus PC-12. You said a 182 for skydiving. Mm-hmm. So that means you only had two skydivers on board, right?
it was a stretch sometimes.
So the 182 is a pretty good utility aircraft, so that was good. And then you named another aircraft after that.
Citation XLS.
XLS, okay. All of those aircraft, and what length of time did you have those experiences?
Oh man, I want to say it was all within, I started the survey job in 2018, so roughly 3 years.
Okay.
Three or 4 years, give or take. It happened really quick. And I think I think my determination was a big part, but also the network I was able to build. Aviation is really, I can't stress that enough. I think the networking and me being able to learn the language of the industry and how to operate and move within it really plays a big role. And also the humility aspect, you know, putting yourself out there to go in and shaking hands and talking to people and being
absolutely
can take you far. It can take you so far, so far. So I can't stress that enough.
Yeah, absolutely. The networking. And the other thing you mentioned earlier, which I'm sure everybody can chime in on, is you needed money to for your training. So you sought out scholarships. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of scholarships out there. I get emails about them all the time from all of the associations and organizations that have this scholarship and that scholarship for primary and for advanced. And interestingly enough, they struggle sometimes with getting people to apply for them. And so, you know, anybody that does apply, you have a really good chance because there's a lot of people that seem to be missing that boat for one reason or another. Let's talk about your cargo flying and how did that come about and how do you feel about the fact that you're now in the cargo flying industry?
It was something that I always thought about. Again, I didn't know about the Ameriflights. I didn't know about the Wiggins Airways and the smaller feeder route operators. I had no idea that of course, most people don't know when they say, how did you become a pilot? It's like, you know, and they just think airlines, you know, they just think big airliners and whatnot. And so I didn't know much about the cargo industry. I thought you just had to be military. That was like the only thing that you know, that was like the legitimately the only way that you could get a job like that was, you know, being ex-military flying like a tanker or something. But
there's so many young people that actually always tie things into the military and they think in order for you to have a career in aviation, you have to go the military route. So you just disprove that.
Yeah. And I think that's how it used to be a long time ago. I think that definitely was a route. And I don't think, you know, times change and things change, of course. And I think the news kind of is a little late out of the gate for the, you know, younger generation. I think COVID really, when I was flying passengers, I really enjoyed it because I'm a people person. I love flying people. And my original passion was business aviation. So, I think for where I'm at in my career, I wanted something a little more fast paced, I guess, challenging. I know cargo operators, it's a lot of night flying, a lot of IFR, lots of different, it's a different ball game. I think it's definitely a different style of flying or a different type of flying. The elements, you're out in the elements. And that seemed like a challenge to me. And I had a buddy who worked at this company at AirNet, and he told me about it. And I was like, man, that sounds awesome. Like you're in a Baron. There's a mix of single pilot and crew in a twin piston at night, IMC in a wintertime. I mean, I was like, man, you know, this sounds like a great opportunity to sharpen.
You're up for a challenge, huh?
always. And I'm really excited about it moving forward. I just finished up my Lear 35 initial yesterday, actually. So I'm pumped. I can't wait to get going. So
awesome. So Jody, sorry it's taken us a bit to get to you, but it's some interesting stories here. But Jody, you have also an interesting background as to how you got into cargo flying, in terms of what you do now. Well, first of all, this has happened on like the last couple of shows with me where there's a connection that I didn't even know existed. So you have a connection that you and Captain Wellington weren't even aware of. I believe they call that Walla Walla.
Yes, Walla Walla. I was born and raised in Walla Walla, Washington. And through my aviation journey, I actually instructed at Walla Walla University for a short time. So that was pretty cool to hear this little town.
The little tiny world.
Yep, it is. And I think if we take that, that's aviation right there. It's a small world. We, you know, it's a small, tight-knit community, and it's important, like Josh said, to network. Networking is so important, especially now. I'm hearing a lot more people reaching out to me because I have a job currently. Can you help me? And I'm like, yeah, let's work together and get you a job right now. So like Josh was saying, network. I had a mentor while I was flight instructing, Jim Fish. He was such a wonderful guy, really encouraged me to get my ATP. He helped me along the way. Once I had all of my multi-engine ratings, he actually got me in contact with a, there was a guy that owned a whole bunch of, It was like a management company. He managed a whole bunch of King Airs and Citations. And so I had the opportunity to sit right seat in some King Airs and Citations and just get some experience flying.
Yeah.
You know, and it's all about that network and finding a mentor to open up some doors that you wouldn't have the chance to have an option to be there.
Yeah. So, yeah. Captain Wellington can probably chime in and Stan can chime in on that. I'll go to you, Captain Wellington, first. Well, you know, hearing what you just heard from Josh and now hearing it from Jody and just your experience and knowledge in the industry, you know, what are your thoughts about that?
All right. By the way, Jody, please say hello to Jim Fish. He was my examiner. He gave me all my several of my licenses.
Oh my gosh!
I will definitely do that.
That's the aviation.
I'm here without Jim Fish, so say hello to him for me.
Yes.
Awesome. Thank you. I agree with both Jody and Josh. Without networking, that is the key to success. No man is an island. No man can do anything alone. I haven't gotten to where I have without networking, without meeting people along the way, working in the industry. We have an organization, OBAP, Organization of Black Aerospace Professionals, you work with and network. So there are so many different opportunities for you to succeed in the industry. You just have to network. And, there were times when I was overseas, I was actually a recruiter myself. I did a lot of the hiring, the interviewing. And so I met people along the way. And just by meeting them, I did road shows. I did, you know, interviews in different countries and hired people around the world. And just by networking, we're able to extend opportunities to people along the way. So networking is the key to success.
Yeah. And I'll use that as a segue to Stan. Stan, what inspired the Regional Air Cargo Carriers Association? What made that happen?
Well, the catalyst for it in the earliest days, of course, was the unfortunate events of September 11th. The freight, the business, whether it been on the large integrator side or the smaller integrator side, became very concerned about what new security measures might be put in place. And there are a lot of people in Washington that were talking about rules and regulations that perhaps were being implemented without their understanding of the industry. We were able to get our members together. We were able to get a single voice together. And immediately we descended on Washington and all those individuals and organizations that were talking about rules and regulations. And we were able to help craft those rules and regulations. So not only, of course, was the primary motive safety and security, but to also make them practical. We didn't want to have the safest cargo industry, but there were no airplanes flying because no one could afford to fly them. So we were able to strike that balance, and we're very fortunate to have been able to do that. And then, of course, as most associations that have the ear of Washington, We became very concerned about the pilot shortage that was developing. And if I could segue to our two younger candidates, the pilot folks that are on your panel, there's a single word that I've always used that describes exactly what these two young folks have experienced. And the word is simply persistence. They have just constantly sought their end goal of becoming a pilot. And we could talk to a dozen pilots, and all dozen of them will have different career paths as to how they reached that pilot seat. Every one of them being different, but everyone unique, but certainly it got them to the job that they desired and they deserve because they worked so hard to get it. So I always commend those people. Certainly the numbers of military people coming into the industry have declined dramatically. And if I could just segue a little bit to the future for all of these young people.
Please.
Very bright. As we all know, the hiccup of COVID has caused the major passenger airlines to contract quite a bit. But with that contraction, I think we're in the process of developing what I would call the perfect storm developing for pilots. The number of pilots that are older, that are 58 plus, many have taken early retirements and have reduced the number of available pilots to return to work down the road when COVID passes. As a result of that, when airlines do return to their full strength, there is going to be a very dramatic and profound pilot vacancy situation evolving.
Thank you for sharing that.
And I think that these young folks are in exactly the right position, gathering up their hours, gathering up their 2 or 3 or 4 years of experience flying for cargo. And then the door will be wide open to them to careers in aviation that people only dream of. So I admire you for staying the course, realizing that this is just a little bump in the road, but stay there. And at the end of the road, there will be great benefits because of your persistence.
So let me take advantage of your of what you just said. First of all, I'm so glad you brought that up because there was a lot of conversation back in my MBAA days about the upcoming pilot shortage. At that time, it was everybody prior to COVID was trying to figure out what are we going to do because there's going to be so many. And you said it so eloquently about people retiring early and things like that. It's just going to open up a plethora of opportunities in the industry. So I want to take a minute to give Jody and Josh an opportunity to ask either one of you directly a question that may they may have in mind about their career moving forward. Do you guys have something you want to ask either Captain Wellington or Stanley? Go ahead, Josh.
Oh, no, Jody.
Go ahead, Josh. That's fine.
Okay. That was one of the questions I asked my company when I had gotten hired. How did you fare in the 2008 recession and then two with this recent the COVID thing? And they said in 08, I think they were their own company. They just had gotten acquired by Kalita, I think, sometime after 08. But I still think that they did okay. And that was something that was a little, that I was concerned about moving forward. But I see it that, you know, with the invention of Amazon and so much online shopping, cargo, I don't think is going anywhere anytime soon. But just since I forgot how old I was in 2008, but I know you guys have been in the industry. What was that like? For the cargo, and because I know that, you know, we just had the COVID thing, but I can only imagine that it is either around the corner or coming soon, a correction. I could be wrong, but I know it's going to happen eventually. So can you guys expound on that just moving forward as to what what we have to look forward to moving forward?
Well, I'll begin by saying it was quite challenging for me. I was not at the time. I was in the passenger industry. I was not in the cargo industry at the time. So I can only speak from that point. But I'll tell you, it was pretty much the same. It was very challenging for a lot of folks during 2008. I was gainfully employed with Spirit Airlines on the 320. And just a lot of airlines went bust. And so I was one of those that got furloughed. And so I had to start my pursuit of starting over again. And with lots of uncertainties, didn't know how it would end, but I never allowed that to detract or take away from the fact that my end goal was to become, maintain my path and get into the aircraft again. And so I kept with it, and it was challenging, but it was successful in the end. As you can see, I bounced back. I went to the regionals, and then from there, and this was during the time of 2008, 2009, 2010, right around that same period. And that's where opportunities opened up for me overseas, where I flew 320s, I flew 777s, flying 777 cargo as well. So, around the world, six of the seven continents worldwide. So It was challenging, but I am here to tell you, there is light at the end of the tunnel. So don't worry about you. Just enjoy the journey. Whatever you go through now, just sit
enjoy
back.
Enjoy the flight.
Enjoy the ride. All right? There is light at the end of the tunnel. And I promise you, if you persist and you will persevere, don't give up. I'm testimony of challenges and a success because I have not given up.
Stan?
Well, I'll chime in on that, certainly. And I have to go back to the points made earlier that the large major integrators that we see today, the FedExes, the UPSs of the world, are extremely stable companies, well-financed, operate nothing but the best quality of equipment, the best training, and have a great philosophy towards their employees. They're less volatile than the passenger airlines, as we've just seen from COVID. But that's not to say that a passenger airline isn't going to be around for a long time. There'll be, just as the expression goes, perhaps a few more ups and downs if you choose that path. Flying at night, flying cargo, flying internationally, there's a great deal of pleasure that could be had there. Again, the equipment has been nothing but first class in our industry. And I would recommend a career in cargo aviation is being high, high on anyone's list of desires. So I would encourage you, stay the course, recognize that there'll be a bump or two along the road. But then again, what career doesn't have a bump or two in the road? And we're no different from any other career. But long-term stability is here. I think we've reached a point where the American public and the world utilizes cargo aviation on a daily basis in their everyday needs. And above all, when we talk about business in the world, we've seen corporations establish warehouses at the hubs of the major freight companies because they recognize that overnight shipping is the future. They no longer maintain regional warehouses when they could have it at a single hub. We all expect our package overnight. We have a new way of thinking that we've evolved in technology.
Overnight, we expect our package the same day.
Well, in some cases, that does happen. You are correct.
Go ahead.
We're an impatient society, and thanks to cargo aviation, we've been able to satisfy that need. So I would encourage all of you to stay the course, get that experience, and get those resumes out to the major integrators when the time comes and you meet their minimum requirements. And you will enjoy a career that someday you will look back upon and say, you know, I really made the right choice.
And if I might add to that before I let you go, Vince, I wanted to just piggyback on that and reinforce, I am working with people here in the cargo industry that have been in the industry. They're there 25 years, 30 years. And it is a pleasure to be in the cargo industry. There is so much stability and it's just a family. And you can enjoy this too if you just keep working at it and visit us whenever you get that time. Because UPS is one of the good options out there, if not the best.
So I was going to ask you guys, I wanted to give Jody a chance, but I don't want to lose this momentum from both you, Stan, and what you just said, Captain Wellington, and that is, what makes a pilot choose one over the other? In other words, when a pilot decides to become, because one of the things that I think is that sometimes a pilot does, they see cargo flying as a stepping stone and then they get in the industry and they fall in love with it and they end up making it a career. So what's the mentality of a pilot that ends up wanting to make cargo flying a career versus flying passengers?
You know, that's something that I had to ask myself. I was not one of the pilots that wanted to fly for the airlines, but it felt like, well, I guess I have to fly for a regional airline to build my time. And that's not necessarily how it has to go. Flying cargo is fantastic, especially I have a family. I have three daughters, a husband, and I spend a lot more time at home than I do in the air and away from my family. Where a regional, you know, you have 3-4 days that you're gone all in a row. With cargo, we may be gone a week if we're traveling, but a lot of the times I'm sleeping in my own bed every night.
Because it's a set schedule?
Yeah, it's a set schedule. We get a month of our schedule 2 weeks in advance, so we can plan our whole month early on. But another thing is we are salary employees. We're not paid per hour, which is very, very unique in the airline industry, because the majority of pilots are paid only if they're flying. And that's not the case for Empire Airlines. We get paid salary. We make a fair amount of money. It's a livable wage. And there are quite a few people that kind of like it. I mean, it feels like a family. We know who we're flying with. And I think, you know, people fall in love with that close-knit community. So that's what I wanted to talk about, is how cargo compares to, you know, maybe the regional passenger airline industry. Also at my job, I'm still building 121 hours, which is valuable time in the air. So I don't know. Josh, how do you feel flying for a cargo operation?
I've only flown a couple of trips. It definitely is a different style of flying. And again, my original love for aviation started with corporate. I love the way a Gulfstream looks on the ramp. I love the way a Falcon looks on the ramp. I love the way a Global looks on the ramp. And that's been my long-term goal for a really long time. And that's kind of what I'm afraid of with coming into cargo, is looking, you know, is falling in love with it. And I know it's going to be a great experience, and I'm going to enjoy every step of the way, like Captain Wellington and Stan mentioned, you know, enjoy the journey. But it is something I really look forward to, because it is a different style of flying. And having flown a little bit of corporate, I'm very interested to see the big difference. As my, you know, of course, I'm going to be flying boxes, and boxes don't talk, and boxes don't need a whole lot of attention. But it is something that I think maybe will happen. I have to see how it plays out. But I am excited to learn the style of flying, and I think it's going to make me makes most people great pilots. I mean, you see a lot. You know, I can only imagine flying international, you know, at God knows how much weights in the back, and you know, you're dodging thunderstorms. You got to worry about equal time points and, you know, crossing the nat tracks and doing all of this. Like, it's just so much to consider, and fuel planning and whatnot. So I'm excited to see it moving forward, but I guess in a couple of years, I'll let you guys know how it's faring out. So
Jody, was that what you wanted to bring up? The very same thing I was just talking about?
Yeah. You know, like you said before, cargo airlines, we don't get a lot of coverage. I mean, it's all about the regional passenger. Even when I mention to anyone that I'm a cargo pilot, they say, oh, do you want to fly commercially for, you know, passengers?
Eventually,
like it's a
right.
step up. And I'm like, well, we're actually at the same level here. But
Stan,
people
do
don't
you
understand.
Hear that all the time?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I guess, do you hear that also, Captain Wellington?
Yes, indeed. But I've been on both sides of the spectrum, and like Jody says, they're just equal. It's just a matter of preference, you know. They offer different styles, as Josh has mentioned. So it's just a matter of preference.
Right. Well, one of the things I think Josh will find out pretty quickly, and Jody just mentioned it, is that cargo flying is scheduled, because it's a lot of it's pretty routine. Whereas when you fly for business, it's on demand and you don't know when it's going to happen. It's like charter. You don't know when it's going to happen. You don't know if the flight is going to the trip is going to be a short trip or is going to be extended because of what's going on with that business trip. So it is a different thing. And of course, I was going to say young and single. I didn't know you were married, Josh, but if you're young with no kids, you can probably flex with that a little bit. But once you start raising kids, then you start thinking like Jody and saying, hey, you know, want to spend time with family and that type of thing need a steadier schedule and all of that. You know, again, as we get close to wrapping up here, the thing that we really want to emphasize are the benefits of this industry, this aspect of the industry that people generally don't know about. And as Jody, as you just said, and as everybody has said today, people just don't know all the great things that are offered with cargo flying. And I think, you know, Stan, you brought up a great point that it is, there's a lot of growth ahead in the industry with all the delivery factors now with the Amazon of the world. I mean, Amazon's even creating has created its own cargo airline. I don't know how UPS and FedEx feel about that, but they're seeing the value of it too. And again, you know, my perspective on it is the regional is just such a great. I mean, to fly cargo in a smaller aircraft, a small jet or a single engine or a twin or something like that, to get started and build your time and do it in a professional environment. You know, part 120 and part 135, et cetera, it doesn't get any better to me. And back to Stan's point, there's so much ahead, for careers as pilots. It's going to be wide open probably, by next year, when the COVID factor is behind us and the industry just gets back to normal. And a lot of people build, during COVID, just retired early, as you said, Stan. So, you know, as we start to wrap up, just want to see if Josh or Jody, if you guys have any other questions or comments, and then also some final thoughts from Captain Wellington and Stanley about the industry and about the opportunities.
Well, if I may, I want to just make a plug-in for FedEx, because that's who we're contracted with. They are developing a specific airplane called the Sky Courier that's going to be coming on the market very soon. And it's pretty incredible. It's going to be a single pilot, twin engine, carrying cargo. And I think it's pretty neat. I mean, that's saying something if the industry is able to develop their very own airplane specifically for cargo. So yes. We're really excited about that coming on and all the things that it's going to, you know, how it's going to open up more channels of delivery and that sort of thing. So
that's funny really that you bring that up because I actually know a lot of people at Textron Aviation, and I was actually trying to get a representative to come on and talk a little bit about that aircraft, but they didn't have someone available for such short notice. Yeah. I'm famous for my short notice stuff.
That's okay. But you know, just to add on to that, because it's a single pilot operated aircraft. I think the plan is to have a right seat occupant there too, which would allow for a lot lower hour pilots to be able to get in the airplane and get some experience
and start building hours,
building some time.
Yes.
So things are really looking up. I mean, you know, you do what you got to do to build hours. You know, photo survey flights are getting bigger and bigger as you get your time built up flying jumpers. you know, you do what you got to do. I went the flight instructor route. And I will say that becoming a flight instructor, I'm sure, Mr. Wellington, you can say that that does look good on a resume. I mean, having experience training someone else how to fly. And I will say, you know, as I'm growing my personal resume, you know, I'm teaching classes for my company as a ground instructor. I'm also a part of the event review committee, and we cover ASAP reports. If you're not familiar with that, that's if you make a mistake, you write a report, and then you're not penalized for that. So we actually review it, and I'm a part of the safety committee that develops and implements safety measures for our company. So not only is networking and mentorship, finding your mentor important, but it's also important that you really take on the industry as much as you possibly can. So
I think that's great perspective. Before we do some closing comments, I have to shift a little bit back to Captain Wellington, because Captain Wellington, you have a JD law degree. And you've done all of this flying that we've been talking about, and you're currently training, doing training, supervising for flying the 747 for UPS, but you got a law degree. Tell us how that happened and what you're doing with that real quick.
All right. So while I was overseas, I had the burning desire to further my education. I had an undergrad in aviation technology, and I wanted to pursue a higher degree. So I decided, I looked at the options that were out there. You know, you had a PhD, you had an MD, and all the others, and you had a JD. So I looked at them, and the Juris Doctorate, I've always been fascinated with the law. And so I wanted to learn more about it. So that's why I decided to pursue my law degree and went to Taft Law School and pursued it and got my Juris Doctorate in 2009. And what I'm doing with it now is, after obtaining my law degree, I also went and got certified in as an arbitrator and as a mediator for domestic and familial relations issues. And so I'm now registered as well with the Georgia Supreme Court Commission of Dispute Resolution, where I'm able to help families where if they have any legal matters that they need to have arbitrated, and or if they have matters that they need someone to help them to come to a successful resolution, then I'll be a mediator to help both parties to come to an amicable solution.
Yeah. Well, let's hope with your flying stuff, you never have to use that law experience on and that from that aspect of things. Let me ask you real quick about the training that you do, that you supervise for the 747 for UPS. Can you tell us a little bit about that real quick?
Yes, I am a flight training supervisor and also a 747 instructor. So I teach all basically recurrent training for all the 747 pilots, captains, first officers, when they need to go through their recurrent training events, whether they be 6 months or yearly annual training events. So basically, they'll come up to Anchorage. They'll do come to get their review every 6 months or in a year, and we'll go in a simulator, and there's ground school involved, and so we'll go through that.
Yeah, we've had Anchorage weather down here, by the way. Is it cold up there?
Yes.
You didn't say that with a lot of enthusiasm.
Undoubtedly, it certainly is.
So while we're with you, Captain Wellington, any closing thoughts for the young people watching and for Josh and Jody?
Yeah, absolutely. If you're ever have the desire to have a lifestyle and a career where you're able to control your quality of time that you're able to spend with you and your family, and if you're interested in a career that gives you the flexibility of seeing the world, you know, and flying different equipments and working with different people of all different nationality, then definitely cargo is definitely one of the ways to go. So I would highly recommend it for aspiring aviators to keep it on your radar. I know Josh has, you know, other things as well that he's considering, but don't take it off your radar. It's a good option. Wait till you see a 7-4.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh man, Anchorage has so many 747s. It's incredible to see. Yeah.
Yes, they're amazing. They're an amazing airplane, and I love the 7-4. I've flown both 7-4 and 777, and I like to classify the 777 as the hot rod and the 7-4 as the Cadillac.
Sounds good to me. Both of them sound great to me, actually. Stan?
I would urge all of you to stay the course. Again, as we've mentioned, there may be a bump or two in the road. If anything ever gets you down and you start to question what your future is in aviation and whether you should stay the course, maybe you could arrange a visit with Captain Wellington, and he would stick you in a 747-800 simulator for 20 or 30 minutes and that will take care of all your doubts.
Well said. Well, very well said. We're going to wrap it up. Josh or Jody, anything closing as we wrap this up?
I just want to say thanks, everybody. And for all those who are watching, it's aviation's a beautiful industry. I mean, there's so many avenues. I've been blessed to have been able to walk down so many avenues and experience so many styles of flying and different types of flying. I would encourage everybody to just reach out. Those who are watching, just reach out, ask questions. I'm sure everybody on this call will be happy to sit down and help. And if we don't know the answers, we know somebody who will. And again, that'll help build networking and at least keep your name fresh in people's in minds at least. Also, I want to thank everybody on the panel for coming and sharing you guys' experience. I really appreciate it. Very motivating moving forward, and look forward to hopefully meeting you guys in person.
Well, everybody wants to meet in person as soon as possible. We all can't wait. Miss going to all the aviation events and conventions and conferences and air shows and all that good stuff. So looking forward to that very much. Jody?
Yeah, I also want to say thank you for all you guys for sharing. It's so cool to meet pilots that have similar backgrounds. Captain Wellington, I had no idea that we would have something in common. So that was really, really neat. And yeah, stay the course. I mean, go to those aviation conventions. That's the best advice I can give you. Get networking, have mentors for those days that you feel down. And I don't know that this is going to be it. I will say I am a mom. I did take 5 years off and I'm back at it. So just because you have a setback and you have to find a job that's not exactly aviation related, that doesn't mean your dream is over with. I'm still going. I want to fly internationally. So I'm looking forward to moving on further in my career also. So thank you, Vince, for inviting me to this. And I'm so glad that we were able to do this today.
You're welcome. And Captain Wellington, I guess that's somebody else that's going to want to come sit in the 747-800 sim.
I mean, I wouldn't say no.
And take a peek at it.
Absolutely.
No. Listen, thank you all for joining the show today. One of the main purpose of this program is to present opportunities that, quote unquote, are not spoken about that much or not the norm in aviation. I mean, we always talk about being a pilot, usually about being an airline pilot, secondarily about being a corporate pilot. But the other opportunities, such as being a cargo pilot, are often overlooked. So I hope we accomplished our mission today of really letting and providing some insight about what can be done in air cargo flying, flying air freight. So we got some great perspective from both you, Stanley Bernstein, with the Regional Air Cargo Carriers Association, and from you, Captain Wellington, with UPS and everything that you've done. So, and I wish you guys the best, Josh and Jody, both impressive with what you guys are doing with your careers. Jody, juggling family and still moving in the direction you want to go is equally impressive just with that. I know, because I have 3 daughters, and when everybody asks me, what kind of airplane do I own? I said, well, I have 2 in college. Next question, please. So, but this has been a great conversation, and I really appreciate everybody being on board with it. And look forward to seeing our viewers and listeners next week with another All Things Aviation and Aerospace. My name is Vince Mickens with Private Media Group, and thank you all for being on board.
Thank you.
Everybody take care and stay safe.